Pat, are we going the way of the Roman Empire? Do you see that happening here?
Oh, I think there are real resemblances between the United States of America today and the Western Roman Empire in the 4th century A.D. In an earlier book, I wrote about how a Roman emperor, about 375 A.D., some Goths had been driven basically by the Huns toward the Danubian border of the empire, and the emperor was a good man, and he didn't require them to disarm when he brought them into the empire, and 2 years later, they killed him in a battle. But the idea there was that the unresisted immigrations are a sign of the end of civilizations. George, I really, you know, I've been written a number of books now, and I've got one coming up in May called Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War. And I've been, you know, I've asked myself, look, we are in the greatest civilization in history. We are the greatest country in all of history. But undeniably, Western civilization, of which we are a part, is guttering out. It is dying. The European nations, all of them, are dying. The native-born populations are not reproducing themselves. Islamic peoples and peoples from North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa are moving into Europe almost unresisted. Europe is aging and dying. It's very rich, as cultures and civilizations mm-hmm. tend to be in their final stage. And you see it happening to America, and a dramatic change in the character and composition of the population, the loss of cultural unity and national identity, the conflicts within, the culture wars, the racial and ethnic conflicts that seem to be growing, and the demands for entitlements, and also, obviously, in democracies, the overspending, the commitments that you cannot meet. Look in Europe at the strikes going on. And I do have to, and the Churchill-Hitler book I'm writing is about how in 1905, the year my father was born, the Western empires and nations like Great Britain, France, Germany, Russia, United States, and Austro-Hungarian Empire, pretty much with the Ottoman Empire tottering, controlled the whole world. And we were moving our civilization to the entire world.
Yeah.
Progress, everybody spoke of it. And then you take a century later and you see where we are, and it is hard not to conclude that we have gone over the top and we are on the downhill slide. And I really believe that, and many of my books have tried to not only chronicle it, but try to find out the big decisions that were wrong and some of the causes maybe which people can't do anything about. You know, if someone talked to me yesterday about, you know, civilizations, you know, they're like human beings. You're young, you're strong, you're successful, and you accumulate wealth and things, and then you age and you die, and it's inevitable, and all your powers are weakened, and it's a long process. But civilizations are the same way.
That's why you got to spend your money, Pat, and have fun now, huh?
No, carpe diem.
Absolutely. 2001, 9/11, George Bush had the support of nearly every nation on this planet, including the Iranians, when he wanted to take out the Taliban. Mm-hmm. The Iranians didn't like them either.
Right.
How did he blow it?
You know, you're one of the few people, George, who baked the very simple point. The Iranians didn't like the Taliban, and the Iranians didn't like Saddam Hussein.
That's right.
They were delighted. The Americans were coming to crush them. They were fearful the Americans were going to put had them next on the list.
Right.
But they were delighted, and they were assisted us passively. You know, planes going over their territory, no protests, things like that. And they assisted us in Western Afghanistan. Your question is, how did George Bush blow it? I have a whole chapter on that because I wrote a column this week. How did George Bush, who's not an unintelligent man, who means well, who's got energy, who is decisive, he's not a deep person, but he could have been an outstanding president. He had the whole country with him and the world with him. And what happened, George, is I believe George Bush was converted, almost like St. Paul was converted, knocked off his horse and converted to this ideology of democratism, the ideology that the United States of America has an historic mission to democratize the entire world, beginning with America, then moving out into the rest of the world, and ultimately we're going to democratize the Middle East and the entire world, and if we don't, America is in mortal peril. And so I went through all of these speeches the president has delivered. He did not invent these ideas. He converted to them. Mm-hmm. And his speechwriters know them. But you read through them, and I call it the gospel of George W. Bush. And his beliefs are profoundly deep, but the statements he makes, and they're nicely written, they seem beautifully written and beautifully stated and wonderful ideas, but they happen not to be true. They're contradicted by history and human experience and common sense. I mean, he talks about all people desire freedoms at all time, and you realize, look, like it or not, the Nazi Party got more votes than any other German party in history.
Amazing.
Hitler was extraordinarily popular in the 1930s. I mean, countries and that all people seek freedom for all, you know, all time. Why then did we have slavery for 1,000 years? So all of these ideas he has about their romantic notions, their utopian notions, and it's a messianic vision, and it will lead us to endless wars and endless conflicts. And then, based on this ideology, he got up and made the Axis of Evil speech, and basically, while we're at war in Afghanistan, the country world with us, threw down ultimatums that, to three countries, all of them with terrible governments, admittedly, anti-American governments, but none of which had attacked the United States. And I think that was the beginning of the mission to Iraq and the belief that the whole Middle East would, once they saw how we arrived there and liberated them and turned them democratic, they would all follow.
How influential was Rumsfeld and is Cheney with him?
Cheney's enormously influential and very supportive of that ideology. He was at American Enterprise Institute, which is one of the centers of it. Rumsfeld, I believe, is somewhat different in the sense, but Cheney, you know, in 1991, 92, he's got a wonderful statement back there defending President Bush, one, why they shouldn't go to Baghdad, just kick them out of Kuwait and send them back up the highway, mm-hmm. and not take the place over, try to run it or reform it. But Cheney changed. And Rumsfeld, I believe, he went in with a small army because I believe that he would probably have preferred to go in, do the job, and come back out. But why Powell went along without protest surprised me, because Powell had expressed what I think is real wisdom, that you don't go in unless the country is united and you have a plan for what you're going to do and how you're going to exit and when you're going to get out of there, that we're not in the business of taking over nations and rebuilding and reforming them, that we don't have the resources or perseverance or the national interest to do so.